Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Okay, Faisal, we got we're getting towards the end of the year here. We're creeping up on this election fast. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's gone on with the pandemic. We've got a lot to cover here.
A lot to cover. Yeah. And we need to kind of make sense of all of this, not just what's happening in the markets, but what could potentially happen just a couple of weeks away with the election.
No, that's right. That's right.
And so we have to bring our chief investment strategist from Manulife Investment Management. We got Philip Peterson on here. Philip, welcome back to the show.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me back on.
Well, as we like to touch base quarterly, Philip, I think we're going to start with a bit of a recap because I think we should take a bit of a stroll down memory lane for 2020 and build sort of the foundation of what we're going to talk about going forward from this point. So maybe just give us a recap on 2020 so far and where we are today.
Certainly. Well, 2020 has been, I think, the epitome of a roller coaster ride. Started off the year strongly in January and February. The markets were up. And then we hit, I would say, the peak panic in terms of the coronavirus and the global pandemic, where we saw a very sharp bear market between February 19th and March 23rd, took the S&P 500 down by 35%, as well as other markets around the world all fell kind of in lockstep with it. And since then, we have seen what I would describe as somewhat of an unprecedented recovery. Both in the markets as well as, you know, the areas of the economy that matter to the markets. And this is a real differentiation because you can look at the broad economies in Canada, U.S. and around the world and say, yeah, you know, the growth rates are probably sluggish, but we are seeing some improvement. But when you narrow in on the areas of the economies in Canada, the United States and other areas on what matters to the stock markets, the equity markets, this is where we're seeing strength. And so that's in housing, that's in manufacturing, that's in retail sales. And this is why the markets have recovered as strongly as they have. That takes us to where we are today. So we're in the middle of October right now. We're seeing some volatility in the markets. We've had volatility in September. September was a down month, which is very typical. And we're leading into volatility ahead of the U.S. election, which is going to be likely contested. The campaign has been quite contentious, and I think it's going to continue to contribute to volatility, but you know, our message is look through that.
So looking through that, let's talk about how you were positioned in a portfolio. Let's talk about the growth side of a portfolio at the beginning of the year, what changes you made through the pandemic, and what are the adjustments? Because you and I had a conversation about what you're doing now going forward, and there's a nice little unique piece that you just added into the portfolio that I think we can spend a couple seconds on that.
Certainly. At the beginning of the year, we were a little bit more cautious. We had some weakness in the overall U.S. and Canadian economies. We were getting closer to a recession. Not that we were calling a recession for this year or that we were predicting the pandemic, but there were signs that, you know, there was perhaps a little bit more risk in equity market returns. So we were more defensive. We were 50% equity, 50% fixed income, or underweight equity in our model portfolio. The pandemic came, brought the bear market with it, brought the recession with it. As at the end of March, then again the end of June and the end of September, we've been increasing our equity weight. And that equity weight has been going up with our confidence. March, there was a lot that was uncertain. You know, how long the pandemic would go on for, how long the economic lockdowns would go on for. By the end of June, had a little bit more clarity. As at the end of September, much more clarity, and we're actually headed, or we have started, we would argue, a new economic cycle, at least, or a continuation of the prior growth cycle. And our outlook over the next 12 months is more optimistic than it's been in the last six. And the area that we think is quite attractive is or would be lumped in under the emerging markets. The majority of the emerging markets are in Asia. They're more Asian economies or Asian focused. This is China, it's Taiwan, South Korea, Hong Kong, so on. What we're seeing there is a complete recovery from the COVID lockdowns and a resumption of growth faster than we're seeing in North America, faster than we're seeing in Europe, we're at a time where their equity markets are also cheaper, and we're likely to see a resumption of earnings growth faster than we can get in the Western world as well. So we like the emerging markets at this point.
So, Philip, let's break it down for a individual transitioning to or living in retirement, looking at their growth bucket, their growth side of their portfolio. You mentioned 65% in equity, 35% fixed income. Break down for me, where should they be investing in each of those buckets?
Certainly. The majority of the equity position that we believe is attractive is in the global space. So that would be ex-Canada. So that's U.S., international, and the emerging markets. Our breakdown is this 30% U.S., 20% developed market international, 5% emerging market, with 10% in Canada. So Canada, we think, is a relative underweight. We think Canada is going to perform, deliver a positive return, but it's probably going to lag the global markets, as we've seen through this recovery. So when you look at that other 55% of the portfolio, it is much more global in nature. And I would say somewhat equally balanced between the U.S. and the rest of the world.
So, Philip, let me just jump in. Your two questions I'm going to really throw out to you, because we only have a couple minutes before we have to go to commercial break. Number one, fixed income, 35% of your portfolio is in there. Last time I checked, we were at 0.7% for a 10-year U.S. Treasury. How the heck are you going to make money in that side? And the second one, there's a second wave coming. Why would we want to be heavily in the equity market now than we were, let's say, 6 months ago with the second wave coming? Shouldn't we harbor some cash and wait for this thing to come through? What are your thoughts about those two?
So let me talk about the second wave first. What we're seeing as a result of the second wave, and you're absolutely right, you know, and in fact, we could even see a third wave come wintertime. Now, what we're seeing with the second wave, though, is a real reluctance by economies around the world to completely shut down. What we went through in March and April was a complete shutdown of economies, manufacturing, the malls, restaurants, everything like that. What we're seeing now is much more of a targeted approach to containment of the spread of this coronavirus. And so we've learned from March and April that perhaps a complete economic shutdown isn't necessary and maybe not affordable. The treatment to COVID is much better than what it was before. Hospitalization rates are lower than what they were before. Death rates are lower than what they were before. So, you know, there's always the risk that we could see a complete shutdown. But what we're hearing from governments and what we've seen over the course of the summer is there's a real reluctance to do so. So that's why we think the areas of the economy that are important to the stock market, retail sales, manufacturing, housing, are still going to advance. To your other question on fixed income, you're absolutely right. You know, I'm not going to make money on a 10-year Government of Canada bond that's paying me 0.5%. I'm not going to make money on a 10-year U.S. Treasury that's paying me 0.75%. The great thing about fixed income is there's a whole universe of bonds that we can choose from. At this stage of where we are in the cycle, I don't want to own long-duration government bonds, like longer-dated maturity government bonds, because typically we tend to see interest rates move up with longer-duration bonds when you're in the early stages of an economic recovery. That's where we are today. The Fed, the Federal Reserve in the United States, Bank of Canada here, both want to see higher inflation. I think with that higher inflation is going to come higher interest rates, which are bad for bonds. What we think a better alternative is within the corporate bond space, high yield corporate bonds, investment grade corporate bonds, as well as emerging market debt, whether it be sovereign debt or corporate debt in emerging markets. What you're getting is higher interest rates, less interest rate sensitivity overall. And we think at this point, less credit risk. We think there's greater risk that interest rates are going to go up and bond prices are going to fall at the government level, then there is that we're going to see a wave of defaults coming, especially given what central banks have done to support the bond markets.
Okay, let's cut it there. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about the election and the, you know, what's going to happen if there's a change in power in the United States. But before we get there, Faisal, we've got to make sense of these changes and how to make sure people can plan long-term, regardless of what we're facing for their needs, their lifestyle needs in retirement. We're doing that at our upcoming seminar.
How do you have a investment strategy that's made in every economic cycle. We're going to talk about that with our solution on Tuesday, October 20th, 7 p.m. live online. You need to go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Okay, is a Democratic win in the U.S. election going to destroy your retirement? Well, let's talk about that after the break. You're on 770 CHQR in More Than Money.